Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Sitka Assembly began slimming down its candidate pool for city administrator to 3 during finalist interviews scheduled yesterday and today at Harrigan Centennial Hall. The Assembly held 5 teleconference interviews yesterday afternoon. 4 more are scheduled for this afternoon, beginning at 4:30 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and although there will be no public participation during the actual interviews, there will be time set aside for persons to be heard at the beginning of the meeting. Yesterday's interviewees included the husband and wife team of Sitkin Rob Allen and Robin Sherman, and solo candidates Robin Bennett, Pamela Kasky, former Search Vice President Mark Gorman, and current Sitka Schools Superintendent Steve Bradshaw. This afternoon, the Assembly will interview Jim Pascal, Arthur Ciora, Alan Lanning, and Sina Gubitayo. Following this round of teleconferenced interviews, the Assembly will select 3 finalists to interview in person on August 23rd and to appear at a public reception the following day. In June, the KQ Cannery in Cake was named one of the 11 most endangered historic places in the country by the National Trust for the Historic Preservation. The building is an artifact of Alaska salmon canning industry and is a reminder of the different people that worked there. KCAW's Eric Newman visited Cake's cannery to learn why it needs help.
The heartbeat of the communities surrounded the operations of the cannery back in its heyday.
That's Gary Williams. He's the executive director of the Organized Village of Cake, the town's tribal government. We're standing in front of the KQ Cannery. It's a series of buildings propped up on pilings. In front are the tide flats in KQ Strait on the northern edge of Kuprinoff Island. The cannery is a complex of huge pale green warehouses and little outbuildings. There are houses where the workers live and boardwalks connecting them all together.
Should we go check out the cannery?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah. As long as you promise not to jump around.
Yeah.
And I will point out in that area there's some asbestos. So
the cannery is vast and filled with big pieces of machinery. Inside there are conveyor belts and funnels where cans move through the plant.
But yeah, see these over here was called the retorts, which were essentially gigantic pressure cookers where the canned fish was put in that for the sealing process, cooking and sealing.
In June, the cannery was named one of America's most endangered historic places. The decision came from the National Trust for Historic Preservation. It was already a National Historic Landmark, a designation it got in 1997. Unlike the Historic Register, which is usually for houses, landmark designations are reserved for big things. Also on the endangered list this year was the Houston Astrodome, a section of Virginia's James River, and a lighthouse in Massachusetts. Basically, naming it an endangered historic place means it's nationally important and it needs attention, urgently.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when this building falls over.
That's Rob Meinhart. He's the owner of True North Development Solutions. They're a historic preservation firm that created a plan to stabilize the cannery, so hopefully it doesn't fall over. He says the KQ cannery is important because it's a good example of the cannery industry in the nation as a whole, but even more so because of the way it shows the labor practices in the industry.
You would have the Filipinos staying in this bunkhouse over here, fulfilling these sort of roles within the cannery. You would have the Japanese population over here. You would have the Tlingit population, the Alaskan Native population over here, staying in these houses over here. It's a highly segregated business operation.
Gary Williams and the tribe want to tell this old story of the cannery business, but they also want to make it usable so it can be part of Cake's economy again.
One thing I've learned in working with the historic preservation world is making a quote-unquote adaptive reuse is one of the goals, so that the building is utilized and not just sitting dormant.
Williams says the restored building could be an opportunity for cultural heritage tourism, and he lists examples like a performance space for the Kaquan dancers and shops for local merchants and craftsmen.
Taking a peek here into the main cannery building, and certainly more than one person suggested, too, that areas of this building could be used as a museum area as well, because there's old equipment, the old machine shop.
But that's a long way off. Getting the endangered designation doesn't come with any money. William says the estimate for the initial stabilization would be $500,000, and that it would cost millions to restore the cannery. Again, here's Rob Meinhart, the planner.
The pilings have undergone severe rot. So basically, this huge structure, cannery structure that's sitting over the pilings, is basically sitting on hollow pilings. It's really kind of scary.
In the years since the cannery got its initial historic landmark status, two buildings in the complex have collapsed. The last one was during a particularly bad windstorm 3 years ago. But Meinhart says the residents of Cake have a reputation for being a very determined group of people. And he believes with their track record and the effort they're putting in, there's hope the cannery can be saved. Reporting in Cake, I'm Eric Newman.
You can see this story and a photo of the KQ cannery at our website, kcaw.org. Yet another delay in a jury trial for a man accused of killing his girlfriend at a Yakutat lodge long ago. The proceeding has been postponed again. As Matt Miller reports from Juneau, the latest delay will allow the defense to review new evidence that stems from the original cold case.
The start of a jury trial in the case of Robert Dean Kowalski has been moved to the first full week in November. A previous start date of this month, August, was earlier set after previous delays and postponements. James Fayette from the Alaska Department of Law's Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals said during a recent hearing in Juneau Superior Court that another delay was necessary. He had just notified Kowalski's attorney about a batch of original evidence that his paralegal had just discovered. They include autopsy photos from the original case in 1996, an original witness list, weapons analysis from the crime lab, and the handwritten notes from the original state trooper investigator. Although it was not openly discussed in court, Fayette likely saved himself from a whole host of sanctions and discipline had he waited until later to reveal the existence of that evidence. It's already in the hands of Kowalski's public defender, Eric Hedlund, but since it amounts to a huge discovery dump on the eve of trial, Fayette proposed moving proceedings back at least several more months. He says a victim in the case did not have any objections to the November 4th start of the trial. Kowalski is being charged with the death of his girlfriend in July of 1996. Sandra Perry was 39 years old when she was reported killed during an accidental shooting at the Glacier Bear Lodge. Kowalski, who was 35 years old at the time, was never charged then for Perry's death. The prosecutor assigned to the case apparently determined that there was not enough evidence to disprove Kowalski's claim of an accident. After charges were filed in the Yakutat case in late 2011, Kowalski was extradited to Alaska. Now 52 years old, he's been held at the Cook Inlet Pretrial Facility and Lemon Creek Correctional Center with bail set at $1 million. He's serving his time for the Montana case while he awaits trial on first and second degree murder charges in the Alaska case. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
A downed eagle was on its way on Monday to the Sitka Raptor Center after some volunteers captured it on Sunday in the Carlana Lake area and kept an eye on the bird overnight. KRBD's Layla Carey has more.
Jeff Dubry discovered the eagle while he and his son were hiking along Carlana Creek. They were on their way back a little after 8 in the evening, and they heard a rustling in the bushes. Dubry says his son reached for his pistol just in case it was a bear.
But we seen the white head, so just seen this eagle. And it kind of looked like it had a broken wing. I mean, it was all kind of, his wing was kind of tweaked. But we walked up to it, and it would just kind of close its eyes, and then its head would just drop. You know, we could tell something wasn't right.
The two called Alaska state troopers and were directed to a state wildlife official. It was getting late, so they gave that official some directions, marked the location with reflective flagging, and went home. Shannon Janda is a veterinarian with Island to Island Veterinary Clinic. She says the business received a call on its after-hours emergency line letting them know about the eagle.
We went out there late last night, and it was still there. very weak, unable to stand up. We brought it back to the clinic and just administered some supportive care, some fluids and pain medications.
Janda also took x-rays and did some blood work. Luckily for the eagle, she has some experience treating birds.
I have worked at an avian and exotic practice for a number of years, so I'm pretty familiar with working with birds, so it wasn't too bad.
When capturing it, she says they used a towel to wrap the bird and thick gloves to maneuver it safely into a dog crate. Many people find such large birds intimidating, and Dubry admits it was a little disconcerting to be that close to a fully grown bald eagle.
You know, it opened up its wings, and it's got like a 6-foot wingspan, and I didn't know if it was going to jump up and start clawing at us or, you know, something like that, but it just was pretty docile, just kind of sat there and looked at us.
Janda says the eagle was severely dehydrated, but other than that, it's not immediately obvious what's wrong with it. There were no clear fractures and nothing showed up on the tests. Janda says it could be a parasite or the eagle may have ingested something poisonous. She hopes the Sitka Raptor Center will be able to rehabilitate the eagle and eventually release it. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
A Juneau elementary teacher has been chosen to participate in a U.S. Department of Education program. The department announced that fourth grade teacher Tom McKenna is among 8 teachers nationwide to be named Teaching Ambassador Fellows for the upcoming school year. 3 of the teachers will serve as full-time employees at department headquarters in Washington, D.C., while the other 5, including McKenna, will remain in their classrooms and participate in the program part-time. The department in a release says the program is intended to give outstanding teachers a chance to learn about national policy issues in education and contribute their expertise to those discussions. This year's fellows were chosen from among more than 1,200 applicants. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. KCAW, Sitka.